Welcome to the Pint and Click podcast. I'm Dave. I'm here with Jamie and Tony, and we're here today to talk about Won't You Be My Neighbor, the new documentary about Fred Rogers and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and it'll be on DVD by the time you're hearing this podcast, so come check it out at the library. Usually I ask everyone else what they thought of it, but today I'm going to go first because I've got kind of strong opinions about this movie. I watched the first half or the first third and did not like it at all. I turned it off. I was at home. I was watching it on Amazon, and I turned it off and walked away and said, this is boring and terrible. Like, I do not – what is the appeal? I mean, I love Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. I grew up watching it, all that good stuff, but it was like a documentary about a good man who did a great thing, and that's not interesting. However, the next day I came back and said, all right, well, how bad can it be? I'll finish the rest of it, and I was floored by the rest of it. There was anxiety, there was excitement, there was fear, there was all these things. Watching him age, there was life. And the first thing that hit me was in the 60s, he had to go before the Senate and kind of fight for PBS funding. And he went up in front of this senator who appeared to have no interest in him or what was going on. And I had to pause it and walk away. I'm like, this is too much anxiety. I can't watch this.
Right.
Poor little Fred Rogers has to go up in front of this, you know, Senate. I don't want to say blowhard. I don't know the man, but seemed to
be. Yeah, he seemed gruff.
Seemed pretty gruff and sure of himself that PBS was a waste of money. And then Fred Rogers is talking to him, and the senator's like, he quiets down, he leans forward.
And it Mr. works. Rogers is like reading lyrics of a song that he wrote.
He says to him, can I read the lyrics to a song? And yes, please.
Yeah.
And so from then on, I think the documentary is fantastic. I didn't realize the show was so very personal. I haven't watched it since I was a kid. So him just talking about sometimes I feel afraid.
Yeah.
Dealing with matters like death and divorce and assassination. Daniel the Tiger saying, what does assassination mean in one of the episodes? Like, it was intense. Yeah, that's my opinion. If you watch the first third and you're not sure, stick with it. Because, oh my God, it gets, it's great.
Yeah.
So do you feel like you wish that they would have structured it differently or maybe brought some of those tensions and anxieties to the forefront more to grab your attention right away?
Or do you
feel like maybe it is just a slow burn of a movie and that it's okay? Or do you feel like there is a big swath of the population who would turn it off before you get to that?
There might be. I'm worried. I'm concerned about that because that's what I did. And I wrote it off as there's not going to be anything interesting happening here. But it becomes more and more personal, a story, and more personal a show as the movie goes on. And I wasn't ready for that. I barely remember. I remember the puppets and I remember the shoes and the sweaters and that's it. But I didn't remember, you know, the episodes about death, the episodes about handicaps and disabilities and racial equality and all of these things.
Yeah. I think war was one of the early episodes that they gave an example of where they were sending balloons where were missives of peace and harmony to King Friday in the make-believe world.
King Friday was building a wall.
I know. Yeah.
In one of the first episodes.
And so, like, putting that material out for children would be transgressive even now in a certain context. You know, there would be definitely backlash from about that. And just think about that being on TV, you know, 50, 60 years ago is pretty surprising.
I liked how it started. I mean, maybe it's because I was already kind of sold on the idea that this is a sacred piece of my childhood, you know, or something like that, where I found it interesting that the origins of his story was that he wanted to put something different on the screen, and he had an idea of what he wasn't going to be, but he also went and did some studying in child psychology and child development to make his message one of authenticity for children, you know, one that actually, like, communicated at the level in which he was hearing them, like, ask their questions, and he would base his songs after their questions, like the song that he, during that Senate hearing, I think was, what do you do with the mad that you feel?
Yeah.
And it's like, that was like a question they said.
Question someone, a boy gave him in a classroom or something.
I didn't know very much about him. I didn't know that he was an ordained minister. I didn't know that he had had background in child psychology. But I did watch the show when I was younger as well. But I think the scenes that really affected me were the ones where he's working with all different types of kids, you know, off the show, but just interacting with them, you know, coming to either a care home or a school or whatever. And just the way he interacts with each child is kind of the way he, like, looks at the television screen, too, where, you know, I think they mentioned in the documentary that he tried to imagine, like, one person, one child in the audience. And you can just see the attachment that was there. So it was really cool to see him interacting with these large audiences, but he just personalized each interaction. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. The movie does a good job of showing that even though maybe the public understood how they enjoyed the show, it wasn't maybe very visceral until that scene where they invite the public to come and visit Mr. Mm-hmm. Rogers, and there's like lines for blocks or something like that. And then you get to see some of the footage from that, which is really neat. Because the show is like something to be felt, and it's maybe it's individual for each person that watches it. It's just really cool that many parents brought their kids to go mm-hmm. and see Mr. Rogers at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The show being so relatable, I mean, we're so far we've talked about, you know, the big topics, mm-hmm. like a week about war, a week about death and things like that. But just like he's always sitting low. He's always shoulders forward, mm-hmm. looking into the camera. In the scenes that you were talking about in the classrooms, he's always sitting on the floor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or he's always leaned all the way over in his chair. Like little things like that. Like he genuinely cares about each child that he speaks with, it seems like. Like you would have to give the kind of serious answers that he gives mm-hmm. to these children. It's a wonder. It's, I don't know anything like it. Mm-hmm. I don't know anyone like him. I don't know any show like his. And so to see, there's not a lot of drama in the documentary. He kind of just mm-hmm. does his thing for 30 years, and it's great.
Which is kind of like this feel-good story that we need right now, yeah. right? Like, mm-hmm. and I feel like when we think about documentaries, especially that sometimes they try to amp up the drama, since documentaries are not, you know, a huge draw to the movie theater a lot of the time. Or when we think about documentaries or reality TV show, they always try to amp up the drama and the tension. But I right. think a TV show like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and also a documentary like this shows that we can appreciate as American culture things that we don't have those emotional highs and lows necessarily, mm-hmm. that conflict and tension. Mm-hmm. One other thing I thought about was the Great British Baking Show, mm-hmm. which is like, you know, a very like low conflict. Everyone's nice to each other compared to American cooking reality shows sure. where they try to heighten this drama.
Yeah.
And we think that's what we want. But I think a lot of us would be happy watching something that's calm and happy, you know, and that is a poignant story that is also very impactful. And I think the tension that we see later is him being like, what good is my work doing? Sure. When they brought him back to talk about September 11th and mm-hmm. stuff. And he kind of felt like a little bit more cynical about like, what work am I?
I don't know about cynical, unsure.
Yeah, maybe unsure. Yeah. Like, not that he felt like it was unimportant, but just, yeah. It seemed like there had been like more of a slight shift after.
Yeah.
But not where he became jaded. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it was important, I think, to see that on the screen as well, to show kind of that he is a human mm-hmm. and his human struggle mm-hmm. is important too, mm-hmm. that maybe he created something that lives up to an ideal, but he's also still a person that has these feelings that maybe my work isn't mattering mm-hmm. or, you yeah. know, maybe yeah. it's in the world and it hasn't done anything.
Yeah.
And there were moments of doubt where he's like, he wrote that letter, was like, can I still hack it? Can I still write a script? Mm-hmm. After mm-hmm. he had left the show and was coming back.
Yeah.
And then he's like, doesn't matter. I'm going to work. So I'm going to try and yeah. we're going to see what happens.
Which is really reassuring. You know, you've done thousands of things and you're still unsure about yeah. it, but you do it anyway.
Mm-hmm. So it showed a human side of Mr. Rogers. I mean, the show is kind of polished, kind of perfect in the way that, like, you know, I do these routines and I read off the script that mm-hmm. I wrote. But not like, you know, there's no dark side to Mr. Rogers.
Yeah.
There's no yeah. terrible
there's no,
secret.
Yeah, there's we no scandal.
Nothing was unveiled
unfolded.
In this.
Yeah.
That we were, yeah.
There's moments of fear. There's moments mm-hmm. of frustration. There's frustration with Saturday morning cartoons mm-hmm. at one moment, for sure,
yeah.
where cartoons are too loud and move too fast. And he's like, sometimes you move slow. Like, let's sit here for a minute and experience
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
silence, and let's watch a turtle crawl across the carpet.
Yeah, let's put a timer on and think about someone we're grateful for in our lives and wait for this minute to go by.
For 60 seconds
for 60
on
seconds.
Television.
Yeah.
That can
me,
you imagine?
That made me think, would this still fly now? Because I know even then people were skeptical about the show flying even then, and it worked. But now, you know, when people click away from something that doesn't load within 2 seconds, or kids are just right. used to apps and things happening so quickly, is the pace of that show, would that still be sustainable on PBS in 2018?
I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe not. I'm sorry to say. But I think the magic of the show is actually really easy to identify. It's mm-hmm. serious and it's honest, mm-hmm. like at all times with all things. Like, you know, he's talking about death and you're like, how can he talk about a thing like that? Well, that's what he says. Like, he talks about the fish. A dead fish is a fish that no longer swims. A dead fish is a fish that no longer breathes. And yeah, That's it. He doesn't try to hide it. He doesn't try to blow it up into something it's not. He doesn't, like, ever lie about, I don't know, kid, it's kind of like this, leave me alone. He's always like, I need to explain to this child. Like, the one kid asked him, how did you get out of the television? And Mr. Rogers stopped and explained to the kid, like, this is how television works. There are cameras. Like, it was essential that he explain to this one child who asked this one question. Like, I'm going to take the time and I'm going to get you to understand. And the joke is, at the end, the child says, well, how are you going to get back in? And maybe the child didn't understand, but he still tried.
Yeah.
Like, Mr. Rogers still tried to teach something to a child.
And he never talked down to them. He always took them seriously, you know. I think that's rare, even in a lot of times in kids' programming.
Yeah.
And he talked about things like he would be mad and he wouldn't know what to do with it when he was a child. Or people would tell him, you know, you should grow up. You should not act this way. He's like, well, I'm not really sure how to act. You know, he was afraid that people would laugh at him. And so when a child came to him and said, what do I do with my anger? What do I do with all the mad that I feel? Like, he would take that so serious and talk to this child and write a song to explain to this child, you feel this way sometimes. I feel this way sometimes. Everyone feels this way sometimes. Here are some things you can do. Just that openness, right?
And it's extremely touching to see that perspective in this documentary, because one of the moments I'm thinking of is where he embodies it in a song, is in the make-believe world where there's a duet going on. And I think it's dealing on the topic of sadness and being depressed and not really knowing how to sit in it. But at least singing that song, I think the way that they describe it in the movie, which I thought was really touching, was just singing the song is a sad song, but then if someone joins you, they can add their bit into it. And it's not necessarily going to change your side of the song. Your side of the song, the puppet side of the song, stayed sad, but it made it better because it had two sides to the song. And it was really an interesting point.
It was like you can be supported by someone, and that doesn't make it go away.
Yeah.
You can still feel sad. You can still feel troubled, but you can also listen for that support. And hear it and feel it and incorporate it into your song in this case.
And yeah, I think that was really like moving, that it wasn't just like, now this is how we'll fix it and this is how it'll be better. But acknowledging that even for small children, things do not always get better right away. And and it's not going to be like, oh, now I have good self-esteem and everything is fine.
And also just the fact that it took place in this make-believe world, which he clearly designates as this is a separate world, but it's, we're just stepping over through this wall and it's, we're just walking over to this make-believe world, and it's not, there's certain truth in it, but it's not reality. I don't know. It's something, something about his storytelling that has like, it has a way of making you a little bit more self-aware. And maybe if the kids aren't self-aware, that's okay. But maybe they can grow into that self-awareness that, yeah, we're just playing make-believe now, but those stories still matter.
And the fact that, like, he never appeared in the land of make-believe, even though he voiced many of the characters, he never showed up there.
Like, that reinforces that in make-believe. He kind of, I feel like he kind of unlocked it. Like, how do you be open with someone? How do you be honest with someone? And for him, it was a puppet. So then he's like, I'm going to make a puppet show. And it worked. And so he did it. There was a clip of him on, was it Tom Snyder? And he pulls out the Daniel the Tiger puppet.
Right.
And talks to him for a little while. And it's like, says the most wonderful things. And Snyder's clearly, I don't know, moved by it. And it's like, if that's all Fred Rogers has to do to become this incredibly open, honest, and supportive person, then he can have all the puppets he wants. I'm fine with it. He even said something like that. There was a scene where he talked about the distance from here to here, and he points to his lips and points to the puppet's lips. Like, it doesn't seem very big, but it feels big to me, or something like that.
Yeah, that the puppet can give voice to the things that he, as a person, even as an adult, might be afraid to say. What did you think about the device of whenever he, Fred Rogers, reflected on his childhood, they would illustrate those anecdotes as kind of like an illustrated children's book where he is Daniel the Tiger, his his puppet? Because I wasn't expecting that. What did you think about that?
No, I thought it was interesting at times. I thought it was distracting at times. There was the one where it talks about writing and it's like a little tiger and he falls into a typewriter. He falls into a typewriter. And like, I'm looking at the animation and looking at the tiger and I have no memory of what that scene was about because I forgot to listen. I was watching the animation. So I thought it was cute, but I don't think it really served a strong purpose, because I don't remember
what was being said.
Yeah.
And I think there was a lot more emotional impact with the other scenes. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that in order for the documentary filmmaker to have maybe a stronger voice, they needed to bridge these things mm-hmm. together, like mm-hmm. maybe mm-hmm. take a step back from it all, because being in all of that action was kind of intense emotionally, or there's a lot going on the screen. Even during the quiet moments, you see a lot of emotion. So mm-hmm. if anything, it might have been good to step away from that just to have a chance to tell the story.
Maybe, yeah.
But I don't know that it necessarily worked.
Yeah, the moments that hit for me was all archival footage of him in front of the Senate, mm-hmm. him mm-hmm. interviewing or being interviewed by, it's not always clear mm-hmm. who it is. You know, when people would say something bombastic and absurd, and mm-hmm. he would very quietly respond with, like, the perfect response, an honest answer to a David Letterman had him on mm-hmm. once and, mm-hmm. you know, was making jokes. And Mr. Rogers is very cool with David Letterman's interview mm-hmm. style. And I think that's what really spoke to me, was, like, this guy is – they said out loud, a couple of people that were interviewed in the documentary, that he never really had a sense of how big a voice he was and how many people he reached or something like that. But he sure seems like it, because he sure seems to take himself very seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that maybe it's just when he's on camera, whether it's on his own show or someone else's, he has that prescience. But mm-hmm. it's like, I need to get my message across and be sincere in my words. But those were the moments that I took away, that I cherished watching.
Yeah, he may even have slightly deflected when asked about it. I think, like, do you realize how influential you are, kind of thing. He's mm-hmm. like, I think he may have said something like, well, I don't feel that way, or something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah, there was a lot of humility in mm-hmm. his responses and how he viewed himself.
Mm-hmm. So I kind of want to go back and watch the show now.
I know. That's what I was thinking.
It's on Twitch, isn't it? Or on Twitch had a
marathon.
I don't know if you can watch it there or not, but I want to go back and...
Yeah,
sure, it's sitting on our shelves.
Yeah.
I want to watch the ones that are about, like, assassination or, like, the Challenger explosion and stuff.
Yeah.
So I wanted to see, like, how, especially now when we have things like school shootings and stuff, like, how do you talk to your kids about it? I feel like those would be good models to see, like, mm-hmm. how do we talk to our kids about tragedy?
He would know.
Yeah.
He'd be the one who would know.
Yeah.
Talk about all sorts of things that mm-hmm. are happening today.
Yeah.
Whether it's events like that or whether it's culture, mm-hmm. which, like, culture today seems mean. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of people are out to disparage each other and put other people mm-hmm. down. And Mr. Rogers sounds like he'd be the one who would say, this is how you counteract that. This mm-hmm. is what you do. And for the life of me, I can't imagine what he would say, but I wish I could.
Right. Yes. What he'd say about, like, celebrity culture and social media and privacy mm-hmm. and things like that.
Yeah.
It's a lot of questions I have.
A lot of questions we have for Mr. Rogers.
That would be a good person to put on, like, your, like, which three dead people would you like to have dinner with or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I've never thought that Mr. Rogers would be up there, but he would be a good
one.
Now,
I have a lot of questions for Mr. Rogers. Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm not into a lot of children's programming, but I can't imagine there's anything like this now or in the future or, man, just the simple things. He probably taught me to tie my shoes. I can't imagine. Transformers, or I don't know, whatever's popular with the kids these days. Transformers mm-hmm. is still on. They got a new series, but other than that, it's a powerful documentary about, I don't want to say a powerful man, because he's certainly not. He's certainly, as you said, very humble and very, like, he seems reserved, but then when he's on the show, he is not.
And he's passionate about the things he's passionate about. He's deeply, he has strong convictions, clearly.
Yeah. Yeah. Seems to be on all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, people would come up and talk to him, like at the graduation commencement.
Yeah.
The woman was, you know, I couldn't go to preschool because I had a disability and I watched you. And he just gave her, like, the kindest, most honest answer. Well, thank you for being here and I'm glad I inspired you. Thank you for inspiring me. Mm-hmm. And it's like she began to cry and it's like, I would too if I were there.
Yeah. And it has, I think, a 98% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
I think there was only, like, one bad or subpar review. So it seems to be a universal beloved documentary as well.
Which is kind of, I don't know, like, the documentary is weird in parts, but who cares? Like, this footage of him is priceless.
Exactly.
It's worth the time. It's worth the money. It's worth a stop by the library. But otherwise... like, I just want to see what else I can see of him. Like, I want to go to YouTube and watch. There was some sort of award show footage I saw for a moment. What was that? I have to go see this. Mm-hmm. I have to see what.
Or like his show for adults.
Yeah.
Like
the
old friends.
Old friends, new friends.
Yeah.
Or maybe like some of his commencement speeches or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's definitely sparked an interest in Fred Rogers and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and the other things he's done. Like, what else is there to this man that I never knew because I was too young, or is lost now that he's passed away, or lost in the shuffle of, you know, TV nowadays being what it is.
Frenetic.
Yeah. Or fame obsessed. Mm-hmm. Like, he was incredibly famous and not the slightest bit interested in, I feel like he'd be on Twitter and you asked him his followers and he would have no idea, like, but he would give you good tweets every day. Yeah.
He would not be buying his Twitter.
He would not be buying bots on Twitter. Oh my goodness. So yeah, I feel very strongly about this documentary.
So it seems like three thumbs up from us.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know much more than I can say. Like, it was a little weird at parts, a little slow at parts. There's a lot of footage of him on the beach and on a boat, and I don't know what that was for, kind of. But these are incredibly minor moments in what was a very powerful experience. So it comes out on discs September 4th, so it'll be at the library. You can come place your holds. Strong recommendations from the Pint and Click crew. So that's it for the Pint and Click podcast. We'll see you next time.